learning about plants and interacting with plants, whether that's sitting with a plant, whether that's harvesting a plant and using it for food and medicine, whatever that is such a powerful way to recognize that and kind of heal this wound that we're separate from nature. I mean, I definitely grew up believing that as a human, I was separate from nature. That was just kind of culturally what was programmed into me. And I feel like my life's work now is deprogramming that.
You're listening to the Feed Your Wild podcast, a conscious lifestyle show about all things nourishing for your body, mind, and soul. I'm Vanessa Rodriguez, and join me for candid conversations with changemakers, exploring health and wellness, food as medicine, intuition and spirituality, and nature-based practices that will transform your health and feed all parts of your wild self. Hey there, we have an amazing episode today. I'm really excited to share this one with you. If you're new here, welcome to the Feed Your Wild podcast. My name is Vanessa and I'm your host. I'm a functional nutritionist, Akashic record reader, and intuitive nourishment guide. And today we are speaking with Rosalie de la Forêt, registered herbalist and author. Rosalie is a wonderful storyteller with colorful tales that draw you into the experience. She does this beautifully with her teachings and her books, and today we're going to dive into her latest book, co-written with Emily Hahn, called Wild Remedies, How to Forage Healing Foods and Craft Your Own Herbal Medicine. Before we dive in, I have a quick announcement. Doors are still open, and I have a couple of more spots for my 90-day Akashic Transformational Mentorship. This is my one-on-one 90-day accelerated mentorship program to help healers and helpers break through chronic challenges and reconnect with your soul purpose with the Akashic Records. You not only get trained in reading the Akashic Records of yourself and others, but we incorporate this into a customized program for you that includes functional nutrition, energy medicine and healing, intuitive coaching, and weaves in creativity, an abundance of resources, and more for a holistic approach to your healing and your reconnection to your soul path and purpose. So together we'll build that customized program for your unique body, mind, and spirit, and you'll receive more clarity, intuitive healing, and build a beautiful relationship with the Akashic Records, your guides, and yourself. I have just two spots left. The deadline to apply is February 16th. You can learn more at wildlyrooted.com/90-day. And because this is a higher touch program, I'm literally in your back pocket for the full 90 days. It is a higher investment and there's an application process. So once you fill out the application, I will review if it's a good fit. I'll invite you into a conversation, no strings attached, and we get to talk about if this is the next best step for you. This is probably my favorite way to work with clients because we go real deep, real fast, and so many shifts can happen. And I, of course, love sharing all the things about the Akashic Records because they've been so transformative in my own life experience and my work. So again, if you're interested, if this sounds like it's calling to you, the beginning of this year, 2021, I invite you to apply wildlyrooted.com/90-day. And of course, all links I mention are always in the show notes. Okay, coming back into this interview with Rosalie, you will hear about her incredible healing story and plant path, how she overcame a rare diagnosed terminal autoimmune disease within 6 months of taking herbs and changing her diet, free from her debilitating symptoms. She also shares how a chance meeting with Tori Amos and magical synchronicities led Rosalie to write her book, Wild Remedies. In this interview, we explore a lot of really important questions, such as if humans interact with the wild, is it still wild? Rosalie shares her perspective and why her life's work is deprogramming the belief that we are disconnected from nature. She touches in on what is wildness and wildland, common myths about our relationship with so-called wildland, and our role in relationship with the natural world and plants. Rosalie offers helpful questions to ask ourselves about how to support the resilience and livelihood of wild places, and how to harvest with awareness, and how to know when it's time not to forage. Rosalie's goal is to bring wild remedies into all areas of our lives, and I find her book, Wild Remedies, to be a lovely experiential exploration that awakens the senses and enlivens the connection to nature within. There's so much to sink our teeth into in this conversation. And while we didn't go deep into specific wild recipes, Rosalie has been so gracious to offer listeners and Patreon supporters a special gift. The first is a free herbal jumpstart course and training. Have you ever wondered what are the best herbs for you to take? This free herbal jumpstart course introduces you to personalized herbal energetics so that you can confidently reach for herbs that work for you. You're going to explore powerful herbs which can address digestion, inflammation, heart health, and the immune system. And of course, she always has these yummy recipes. You can find that in the link that I have in the show notes. And you can always go to wildlyrooted.com/podcast to connect with the specific episode page. And we have a special gift just for Patreon supporters. Yes, Feed Your Wild has a Patreon, and I am so, so grateful for all of the supporters who have committed to a monthly contribution. You guys rock. You are supporting the production and expansion of this podcast, and I'm forever grateful. So we have a special gift just for you, and that is Rosalie's Sweet Celebrations ebook. She's got delicious recipes that utilize herbs and plants in beautiful ways. Herbal recipes is something that has become a treasured family tradition for Rosalie and has been a beautiful grounding practice for myself and my family. So I'm excited to try out a ton of these recipes that she has. She's got a tulsi and hibiscus oxymel, mulled cider, and our wine, which is one of my favorite drinks of the winter season, a spiced rosehip cake, golden milk ice cream, and rosehip chia seed pudding. So, so good. To grab that special gift, you can become a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/feedyourwild. I love this quote in Rosalie's Wild Remedies book. I think it speaks to so much of what we've been diving into over the past year with this podcast. And that's, unlike wellness fads that come and go, your relationship with plants and nature will be everlasting, deepening with each new season, each new recipe, and each new breath. I know you're going to love Rosalie and her wisdom. So here we go with our conversation. Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Feed Your Wild. I'm really looking forward to today's episode. We have Rosalie de la Forêt, registered herbalist. She is passionate about helping people discover the world of herbalism and natural health. Her teachings make herbs simple and practical for everyone. She's the education director at Learning Herbs and a registered herbalist with the American Herbalist Guild. Rosalie is the author of Alchemy of Herbs, Transforming Everyday Ingredients into Foods and Remedies that Heal, as well as Apothecary, the Alchemy of Herbs video companion, and the online courses The Taste of Herbs and Herbal Cold Care. Today, we are also going to dive into her latest book, co-written with Emily Hahn, called Wild Remedies, How to Forage Healing Foods and Craft Your Own Herbal Medicine. Rosalie, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. I'm really happy to be here, Vanessa.
Well, I'm happy to dive into this conversation. This past year, we've been talking a lot about what it means to build sovereignty and self-sufficiency and really support ourselves, sort of like reclaim that innate ability to tend to our own health. And I know that you have your own health story and plant path story of how you got into this in the first place. And I thought that'd be a great place to start so people can get to know you if they don't already, because I know a lot of the herbalists already know who you are. So yeah, let's start there, the beginning of your path and your healing story.
Sure. Yeah. So I feel like there's been so many pathways that have led into where I am today. Of course, it wasn't just that one thing. I've always, as long as I can remember, I've been interested in natural health. Like as a teenager, I was a total nerd. And I remember being really excited to get my driver's license because then I could drive myself to the health food store. I was really excited about that. And I also remember getting books from the library about like vitamins for dummies. And I would like make my own flashcards about, you know, like what does vitamin A do and what food is it found in and that sort of thing. So I was always interested to some degree. And then in college, I was a very involved activist and I worked on a lot of indigenous rights and environmental rights causes. And I was super passionate about it. I often say that that was like my minor in college was really activism because that was what I spent all of my free time doing. And after years of doing that, I slowly became a little bit disillusioned, I guess you could say. You know, I went to a lot of protests, which I to this day feel are very important, but I just started to feel, I don't know, just not as passionate about them, especially like I remember one time I was standing outside of a Gap store in downtown Portland, Oregon, and I was passing out flyers about the sweatshops that Gap has been linked to. And I guess I was, you know, in my young 20s and I was kind of like getting in people's faces and not like mean, but just handing them these flyers. I'd be like, hey, are you shopping here? Do you care about who might have made your clothes and what conditions those are in? And people did not want to hear it. And I was obviously just raining on their day and it just didn't seem very effective, you know, ultimately. So I started just kind of wondering, you know, like, what does it take to really get to someone's heart the way my heart has been open to this? And how do we really create change? And it was just after college that I started going to they called it a primitive skills and wilderness school. And so I started attending that school. And for me, this was all these things I was learning in that school was entirely new to me. I'd grown up camping and being outside in that way, but I was very much a stranger to the natural world around me. And this was a very intensive, hands-on relationship building with the natural world. And so I was learning how to identify plants and I was learning how to build shelters in the woods and all sorts of things like that. And was actually in the midst of those studies where I felt like every day my eyes were being opened wider and wider to the beauty and just that really deep relationship that's possible with the natural world. And so it was a very exciting time. In the midst of that, I got really ill and I came down with these really bizarre symptoms. At first, I thought I had the flu. I had a high fever, but the fever only came at night. So I'd get this fever of like 104 degrees, but only at night, and then it'd be gone in the morning. And that went on for weeks. And I had this rash. It was like this bright orange salmon colored rash. And it would like be on my thighs one day, and then it'd be gone and be on my chest the next day. It was, you know, so it'd move around. That was bizarre. And then I had this severe joint pain that made it very difficult to move at all. So I spent about a month in bed. And I could barely take care of myself. My friends, you know, we thought it was like some kind of contagious thing. So my friends would leave me like boxes of soup at my door and I would open my door and get the box of soup and heat it up and eat it. That was like pretty much all I could do day in and day out because the pain was so severe. And eventually, you know, we figured out that was not the flu. And it turned out to be an autoimmune disease. And it was a very rare autoimmune disease called Still's disease. And so I got medical care for that. And the doctors at the time, you know, it was very rare, still a rare disease. And they told me, you know, we don't really know about this. And they gave me a brochure and they said there was a Yahoo discussion group and they gave me tons of steroids. And they said, this is it. This is all we can do for you. And you have a life expectancy of around 40, but your quality of life will probably be falling significantly before then. And they just had no answers for me, which really, like looking back, was I think a blessing in some ways because it's like that door was closed to me. They weren't like, there was no hope to hold on to with that diagnosis, with that group of people. And so I spent a couple days very depressed and just, you know, I think going through all those emotions that you can imagine one might have of why me and what is going on here. And then I went to the library and I ordered every book I could on rheumatoid arthritis because it was a very similar disease. It's not the same disease, but very similar. And I came across a book that was self-published and it talked all about these things that you can do for autoimmune disease. And it just rocked my world. I was like, whoa, like the doctors never told me anything about this. And it was all about leaky gut or intestinal permeability, which back then, this we're talking like 20 years, was really not talked about. And it talked about vitamin D3, which I think is big news now, but back then was really not talked about. So I started kind of implementing the things of this book and I started working with alternative practitioners. I started to see five element acupuncturists, started to take a lot of Chinese herbs. And within 6 months, I was symptom free. And that was a huge paradigm shift for me. You know, I, up until that point, I'd been interested in natural remedies, but I kind of thought they were for like mosquito bites or, you know, like something, you know, you have a boo-boo. And so you use some cute little herbs on them. Having a serious terminal chronic illness and having the doctor say, sorry, there's nothing we can do. And then having the experience of going to all these alternative practitioners and having them say, oh, we can help with that. And then actually getting help with that was just, yeah, it really blew my mind, honestly. So I was already into nature connection. I was already into learning plants, but that really solidified things for me because in that moment, I just thought, who are all these people out there that have similar situations to me who did not find these alternative practitioners or didn't find these answers via a plant pathway? And just, I really wanted to help people in that way. So that was already, I was already into it and it just really solidified that. And that was really the beginning of another 8 years of study going to different clinical herbal schools and various herbal schools to learn all that I can.
Mm-hmm. What did your doctor say? I mean, was there, I'm always curious to ask that when I hear people, you know, curing themselves basically or reversing their symptoms.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's kind of like, I'm laughing because it is something that makes me laugh a little bit because I was so excited to go back to my doctor. And, you know, this is like 23-year-old Rosalie, right? Who's like going to walk in and tell the doctor all about it, you know? And so, but I was so excited and I thought that she would be really excited too, you know, like, oh, wow, you know, and this would, you know, I think I had these grandiose dreams that this would like change her life too, you know, because, well, there's answers for this situation. And, yeah, it's not how that went down, though. I went in and I, you know, told her so excited. I mean, I can just see me on the edge of my seat, like excited to tell her that, you know, I changed my diet and I'd taken all these herbs and on and on. And I just remember she just looked at me, you know, pretty sternly. And she said, there is no scientific evidence that your diet would affect an autoimmune disease. And she said, you were most likely misdiagnosed. And which, you know, there was just no way. Like, I mean, there were, you know, physical tests, you know, like blood markers that were done that showed that I had the disease. I had all the symptoms. I mean, it was just, you know, for that. And then just to make that statement, you know, but, you know, maybe at that point there was actually no physical or no scientific evidence linking the two. I'm not sure. We know that's different now. I mean, there's been a lot more research into intestinal permeability, which I suspect was probably a big issue with me. But, you know, I didn't have a biopsy of my intestine, so it's just guesswork. But I just couldn't believe it. I mean, she just was not curious, was not interested. And that was that. And, you know, but again, I kind of laugh about it now because I can also understand what that must have been like for her, you know, to have this like 20-year-old come in and be like, oh, I have all the answers. Right. So I probably could have handled it a little bit better. But, you know, I was who I was back then. So.
Well, you know, I appreciate you telling that story because in my experience, like I've had so many clients and colleagues and, you know, just people in this industry who have done major things when it comes to their health, things that were, you know, people thought that were not possible in the conventional medical paradigm. And it's so common for their doctors to either just be like, okay, that's great, and turn a blind eye or, you know, debunk it in some way. And I think like now I can also understand that it is almost this huge paradigm shift that needs to happen within their own mind. They're literally, when they hear you, Rosalie, come into the office and you're telling them, I was able to heal myself with food and herbs, it like breaks down so many of the structures and the foundation upon everything that their career was built upon. So, you know, I imagine there's like this huge subconscious block to even like hearing what you had to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, definitely.
And I've also had colleagues who are like, who are MDs and who have sort of like drank the holistic Kool-Aid, you know, and like, and are converts because they had so many patients who were doing it. And so they were like, what is this about? And they were ready for that change. But I think this really speaks to the tenacity of your spirit, Rosalie, and also thank God for libraries and books.
That is so true.
Seriously, yeah. And for self-publishing. But speaking of books, you have written a couple of amazing, incredible books that are just so wonderful and full of practical information that I feel is really accessible. And that's one of the things that I really enjoyed about your most recent book, too, Wild Remedies, is that it's literally an action guide to connect with the world around you and connect to the food and the herbs as medicine. Would you be able to talk a little bit about what prompted you to write this book, Wild Remedies, and then we can go into it a little bit deeper?
Sure. Yeah, that feels like, you know, there's three different stories I could tell about that too. But in 2017, I published my first book, Alchemy of Herbs, and all these circumstances came together in that I was able to go to Ireland and spend some time there and then meet one of somebody who I've looked up to pretty much my whole life, who's Tori Amos, the musician.
Ooh,
and wow. Yeah, I bet you didn't see that coming.
No, left field, but we like it.
And I met with her and I gave her a copy of my book, Alchemy of Herbs. And we chatted for a bit. She was so amazing. She was so present. And she asked me a question, which, you know, like I'm there, like just starstruck, you know, trying to like breathe normally and that sort of thing. And she asked me, she says, what is the best way to take herbs? And I hope I said something coherent. I think I did, but it was kind of a blur. But I remember, you know, talking about nature connection and that the more we can bring plants into our lives on many different levels, not just as a supplement, the more transformational they will be. And so I, you know, had that experience with her, went to the concert, came home. And I tend to have kind of an obsessive personality, you know, things go over in my head. And of course that situation meeting Tori went over and over in my head. So it was just so amazing for me. And I remember I was very clearly standing in my kitchen and all of a sudden it was just like the thought just like landed with a thud in my whole body. And I was like, you will write a book about this. And I had just finished, you know, publishing Alchemy, and writing books is no joke. Like it takes years of work. And, you know, it was no small thing. And I didn't think I would write another book after Alchemy. That was like, one was enough for me. But yeah, that thought landed and I was like, okay, like, I hear you. And then the next thought was, and you'll write it with Emily Hahn. And who is a good friend of mine. And we had had numerous conversations about the importance of nature connection when it comes to herbalism and how healing that nature connection has been for us. Not just, you know, the herbs that we take, but that connection that we make. And so that's how the idea of the book was born. Luckily, she said yes. And it was really amazing to write the book with her.
Beautiful. I love that. And I love the sort of divine connections and synchronicities that can happen that sort of like plant those seeds later on. And it's funny when you speak about like birthing this book, it's like, you know, if you even want to have a second child kind of thing. And then, you know, baby book spirit comes in. It's like, you got no choice. Like, here we are. So for those who are not familiar with your book or haven't and aren't really familiar with Wild Remedies in general, how would you describe the book to them? Because I love it because I initially thought, oh, it's going to be a wonderful compilation of, you know, like some herbs and recipes. But to me, it was so much more. Would you be able to describe a little bit about what it is?
Sure. I love how you said it was an action guide and you talked about how it was practical because those are like, you know, checking things off my list of how I like to serve. So our vision for this book really brought us back to our beginning days of learning about plants. And I already mentioned this a little bit of just how every day felt so new, so big. I went from knowing zero plants at all to learning about plants intimately and, you know, not just the plants themselves, like what their names are, but also, you know, their many gifts and how they serve the ecosystem that they live in. And then their gifts as food and medicine and how all of that was just so, you know, eye-opening and amazing for us, for both of us. And how that naturally happens within learning about plants around you and learning about seasons and cycles. And you know, for me, again, I went from being pretty much someone who was raised in the city who, something I write about in the book is that I grew up partly in southwestern Utah. And I remember like in grade school, you'd have those like, the like boards where you'd put the teacher would staple the calendar each month and have little, you know, like cartoony things. And I remember it's like in December and January, it was always snowy, you know, like snowman and snowflakes coming down, but it was southwestern Utah. Like, we didn't have snow, you know, but somehow this idea, like this, you know, like four season idea was just kind of put on us. It wasn't about like exploring what actually was outside. It was about like learning the four seasons as applied to like somewhere else. I don't know. But we wanted to make an action guide to help people, you know, strengthen their connection to nature wherever, you know, they're at in that journey, whether they're seasoned at it or just beginning. And so learning how to get in touch with the plants around you, the resources around you, meaning like, you know, the ecosystems, learning from everything from geology to elders and being able to really apply that practically. And for me, learning about plants and interacting with plants, whether that's sitting with the plant, whether that's harvesting a plant and using it for food and medicine, whatever that's, you know, whatever that is such a powerful way to recognize that and kind of heal this wound that we're separate from nature. I mean, I definitely grew up believing that as a human, I was separate from nature. That was just kind of culturally what was programmed into me. And I feel like my life's work now is deprogramming that and, you know, learning how to truly see myself as part of the ecosystem where I live and part of a reciprocal relationship there, and recognizing, you know, everything around me is all of us being one and not having that separation that I think many, probably not all of us, but many of us have been taught. So that's the book is about learning how to sink deeper into seasonal rhythms, learning about the plants around you. And the book primarily focuses on weeds, so that grow very commonly all over the world. So that there's plants in there for everybody, especially, you know, North America and also in Western Europe as well.
Yes, I really love it. I think it's such a beautiful way to connect with the land and the plants. And I really felt that the way that you guys laid it out and the exercises and practices that you have, along with a really wonderful companion ebook. So anybody who's interested, I highly recommend you check this out and then go to their resources page and get the diary or the journal, because I think one of the key aspects of this is making it so experiential, like this experiential exploration of not just the land and the plants, but also yourself. And so I thought that was really brilliant of you guys for doing that, because I think, you know, when I, especially with some students that I work with, when you start to talk to them about wild crafting or foraging and actually beginning to work and make your own medicine, work with plants and make your own medicine, there's a bit of fear around that. And I think it really stems from that disconnection and like not knowing where to start. And I just love that you guys kind of start with like home as yourself and looking at your connection to the land. What are some things that you tell new students or people who are interested in herbalism and wildcrafting? Like, what are some foundations for them to really start with?
Well, one thing is definitely getting outside and seeing what's there. And I know from personal experience, because as I've mentioned, I didn't know plants at all before I started on this path. It can be when you first start out, it can look like a wall of green. Like, there's a green plant. There's a green plant. Ooh, that's a shrub, which is also green. And it, you know, it's hard to differentiate in that way. But it really does just take showing up and looking at things and paying attention. And it's amazing how much can come out of that. And now, you know, when I go to the woods, I don't see green. I see individuals, plant populations. I know almost every plant by numerous names and have relationships with them because I've shown up. You know, I've taken that time just to be there. And it doesn't, I'm not a super detail oriented person. I'm not somebody who, you know, lugs out, you know, 2000 page botanical ID book wherever I go. But there's so much we can learn, again, just by showing up and being there. And it can start so small. You know, it can start in learning weeds in a community garden if you live in an urban setting, it could be learning plants that grow at the local park or wherever that might be if you're hiking out maybe further out in rural areas. So there's a lot of, you know, there's so many ways that we can be with plants, but we have to make that decision. I guess the first step is to go be with them. And I just thought of a story, Vanessa, I think that is applicable. So I mentioned, you know, I was really sick and I really wanted to be a clinical herbalist. I wanted to really help people who had serious problems. And so I went to a variety of schools, and I went to a clinical school and did a mentorship that I spent several years doing. And I remember I was on lunch break for this, you know, very advanced clinical school. And I went on a walk with one of the other students in the class. And he'd actually been studying with that teacher for many years, longer than I had. So he was very advanced in his knowledge and was already practicing and all this stuff. So we went on a walk. We were just, you know, walking around. We were in Seattle. So we're walking around Seattle neighborhoods. And at one point he says, "Hey, I have a question for you." He said, "I'm just curious. Do you know what this plant is?" And he pointed over to this plant, and it was Oregon grape, which is a very, very common plant that grows in the Pacific Northwest and one of our favorite medicinals as well. And I said, "Oh yeah, that's Oregon grape." And he goes, "Oh yeah, I use that so much in my practice. I've always wondered what it looked like." And that blew me away. And I have to say, at the time, I felt pretty like judgmental. I'm just going to own it. I did. I was just like, how could you not know this? You know, you use this plant, you live with this plant. And then it just made me realize later on, as I grew a little bit wiser and let go of a little bit of judgment, that there's so many different ways to practice herbalism. You know, some people do, you know, just they order the plants online and they use them, and people get great results with that. You know, like, it's not like that is the wrong way to do it necessarily. You know, this person, he was very advanced and was using herbs with his clients and getting results. So it's not like that's always harmful, but it just made me like really reflect a lot. I mean, I've thought about that experience so many times over the years and how powerful it is to actually know the plants that we're working with. And to be able to choose, even proactively choose the plants that we want to work with because they grow local to us. And one thing that I recommend for people growing out or just starting out is that maybe you don't want to harvest plants when you first start out. That's okay. You know, you might want to, I think it's actually a much better way to approach things very slowly and really get to know all of the, you know, regenerative, ethical harvesting methods, really get to know the ecosystem, really get to know how you can serve that area, not just take from it. So I think starting out slow is a really good thing. And so another way to do it is to say, you know, I'm interested in working with plants. Maybe you see a plant that keeps popping up for you some way, but just getting to know it in whatever way you can. And again, maybe it's just sitting with that plant for a while. maybe you do want to work with it medicinally and you want to order it. Either, you know, there might have a nearby medicinal herb farm that you can order from, or in some way, you know, just whoever is going to be that intermediary to help you get the plants, you know, finding someone that does so in a respectful way. So there's so many different ways in that. But I think that first step of saying, I want to work with plants and I want to find some that are calling to me here locally or important to my local ecosystems, it's going to be probably a more powerful and transformative experience.
Hmm. Well, I love that example, that story that you shared, because honestly, like when I did my master's in human nutrition and we had some like botany and plant medicine classes, they were all really focused on just sort of like the phytotherapy aspect of it. Not once were we encouraged or like in the classroom were we taught to connect with the actual plant, you know? And so I think that as you're speaking into this, there are so many ways to practice with plants, but it just felt so wrong and incomplete to me, you know, because I had prior experience working with plants and herbs, but it was really seeded with my like food as medicine, like grandmothers who would, you know, have their gardens with chamomile and mint and then in Puerto Rico, like ginger and some plants that they would bring over from the island. This one in particular, oregano brujo. And I just remember like them always telling me, oh, this is like food as medicine and we can heal with these plants, and then being able to taste it and connect it. And so I was so excited about these classes, and then we got into the classroom and it's like, oh, we have to read 10 pages about the biochemical constituents, you know? And so I could totally see how somebody could build an entire practice based on that kind of herbalism, you know? But what I love that you teach in this book is how to connect back to the plants and finding the nature wherever you are. Because I grew up in Chicago, but you know I connected with plants in my grandmother's gardens. Like that's where I found nature. And I think that, and I have so many friends who are saying, well, I live in Chicago and there's no way that I can access this. And I love how you kind of debunk those myths. What are some of your favorite ways for people to connect if they're in urban settings?
Yeah, that's something that's actually my eyes have been open to a lot working with Emily, because Emily lives in LA, which is not really known for being, you know, having lots of wild places, I guess you could say, although it is surrounded by a lot of really wonderful natural landscapes. But one of the exercises that we do in the book that we invite people to do is look for nature in unexpected places. And we have so many weeds that love to grow in unexpected places. And whether that's dandelion coming up through the cement cracks, or, you know, chickweed growing in dark, shady places. And so I think at first it just takes a moment of like opening our eyes to see what might be there and allowing that wonder and surprise to come in. And there we know that there's lots of wildlife too in cities, whether that's crows or other birds that are visiting the urban landscape, or, you know, even mammals. Like we know coyotes are very successful in urban settings. So there's so much there, but it really does just take, I think, that intention of just saying, I want to see what's out there, and opening our eyes to that. So that's a good first step of looking for that. And then, of course, one thing that I have loved to see in the past couple decades really is this big interest in community gardens and creating gardens in urban settings, whether that's, you know, there's all sorts of really interesting things going on. I've seen herbalists creating pot gardens, like growing in pots, gardens around urban centers, or having, you know, actual community gardens. When I lived in Seattle, there was a community garden near my house, and I would go there when people were there, and I wasn't a part of that community garden, but I would ask them, like, can I harvest these dandelions? Can I harvest this chickweed? And people are often very excited for me to do that because I'm basically weeding for them. So that's another way to do that. So yeah, looking for nature in unexpected places is a good way to go. And And there's also a surprising number of medicinal herb farms that are popping up, you know, growing either within cities or just outside of cities. And that can be another really great way to connect with people growing the plants and being able to get locally sourced plants as well.
Beautiful. Yeah. You know what I love about it too, is that especially when you're going to go to your neighbor and ask if you can do some weeding for them, it's actually connecting you to the people and to your area also. It's like, what's available and who is there to ask and connect? And maybe like, are there teachers or there people who are already doing this? So it kind of, I know that some people might be like, oh, I gotta talk to people. But I think it could be such a beautiful way of sort of like what you were talking about, opening up your eyes to not just the resources that are there, but like the living beings, both, you know, human and plant.
And plant people are so much fun, I have to say. There is something that spark, you know, and when you meet another plant lover, I can be just, I feel like you can connect on this level. Even just, it's like, oh, like I recognize you, you know, in that. It reminds me of a couple of years ago, I was in Mexico. My dad lives down there, so I go not infrequently. And I was walking through this, through Cancun, which is a big urban center. And I was walking through and I walked by this house and there was just plants everywhere, you know, growing in these little pots, but there're just so many. And so I slowed down and I just started looking, and pretty soon this woman came out and we just ended up talking for an hour and just all about the plants. And she was an herbalist. I mean, she started telling me all the medicinal properties of them, and it was such a wonderful interaction to meet this kindred spirit in Cancun and share, you know, love of plants together. So, and she was excited too, you know, it was really fun. You know, she was excited to share. And anyway, the whole experience was just so wonderful. And that's, you know, not the only time that I've experienced that, you know, you meeting that kindred plant person. So yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I love that. I honestly feel like there's the energetic magnetism between people like that, you know, where you just kind of find yourself with your people. And I also feel like the enthusiasm and passion is contagious and like helps you learn, you know, like I want to learn more from somebody who is in it and loves it and lives it and breathes it, you know, and how I take that on and it sticks a lot longer, you know, than just reading it in a book or someone who's saying something in passing. So
that is so true. And that's, you mentioned something about experiential, and that's truly what brings it to life for me personally. So that's what I like to share with others. And I feel like, you know, I love to share about plants and I love to help guide people along that path because it's been so rewarding and fulfilling for me on so many different levels. But ultimately, you know, the people are their own teachers and the plants are also the teachers as well. So, and we can learn so much from them. And like you said, you know, like reading about plant constituents in a book only gets you so far. But I think of it just like, if you think about an apple, like you could read 5 pages about an apple. You could learn about its history and the chemical makeup and all the different varieties of apples. But it's not really until you bite into that apple that you really even begin to know what an apple is. And it's same with all sorts of, you know, all of the medicinal herbs, same thing. You know, you can read about them, but it's not until you really invite them into your life that you get to really experience them.
And guaranteed, as you were saying that, because I experienced it as you were talking about the apple, anybody can in a moment conjure that taste, that crispness, the juiciness, the aroma, like reliving that experience. And that's really calling it from that embodied experience and that full knowing of what an apple is and how powerful that is. So it's like working with herbs and plants and getting to know them in that way. So powerful. Like you don't have to keep so many notes in your back pocket when you can have that in your body.
Yeah. And you never get bored too. Because you think about like the bite of one apple is like never the same as another, you know, like that you could have like a mealy soft apple or a crisp apple or a super sweet apple or an astringent apple. There's so many different apples, and the same thing with herbs, even, you know, herbs of the same variety or the same type of plant are going to be different where they grow, different how the medicine was prepared. So we never get bored because there's just an endless things that we can keep sinking deeper and deeper into.
I love it. And I'm eyeing my apple across the room after this podcast episode. Well, okay, we talked about finding nature in urban settings, but I know that there's so many folks who, if they're not already living in or near wild places, that they would like to venture out and really get connected in that way. But I'd love to first talk about, like, what is wildness or wildland? You know, I think that there's a lot of misconceptions or myths, and obviously, like, varying types of relationships to so-called wildland. So I was just curious, in your perspective, like, what is wildland and wild plants and our role in relationship with the natural world?
Mm-hmm. Well, it makes me think of another story. My husband and I moved to where we live now, which is in the Metau Valley, original home of the Metau people, which is, it's about 3 hours inland from Seattle in Washington State, and it's a couple hours south of the Canadian border. So it's in the foothills of the Cascade Mountains. And the Metau people lived here up until they were still living here in the 1900s, which is later than a lot of people were living in their homelands. But since, you know, since they haven't been living here anymore, we thought when we first got here, we thought, well, there's probably so many wild plants everywhere and they must be huge. You know, they haven't been harvested. And so we started going out and looking at plants around these areas. And what we immediately saw was that the lands we could find, it was easy to find what must have been traditional harvesting places because of the concentration of edible plants. But what we saw is that, you know, the plants were overcrowded. They were not as big as we would have expected them to. And that, you know, kind of looking at that and thinking about that critically, and then reading books like Tending the Wild, looking, you know, how these lands were so lovingly tended and taken care of, and, you know, through generations of knowledge and care, we began to see, like, oh, these are untended lands now. And that they are in some, you know, how would I say that? That they could probably benefit from knowledge harvesting and regenerative harvesting. And we're lucky to live in this place where there have been a lot of reconciliation that has been happening between the people who live here now and the Metau people who live in a reservation just in another valley over. And there's been a lot of repair work going on with those relationships and inviting people back. And so that's been it's been going on for decades, and a lot of people here put a lot of effort into that. But so when I think about wild, just where I live, you know, it's like, what does that mean? And how have these lands been treated? They were, you know, so lovingly cared for so long. And then what happened is the, you know, timber industry came in, took out a lot of the old growth trees, clear cut a lot of things. And then land, huge tracts of land have been put on like a preservation status, which I think is interesting because on the one hand, I personally like to see that these lands that are covered in trees are not going to be developed, and that there are, you know, that these ecosystems can remain intact. But when we talk about preservation and we talk about, you know, stay on the trail and hands off, that is something different than has ever been here before, right? It's not like, I don't know, it's a different thing to think about. So it's a very complicated subject. And what really interests me is how can we listen to the indigenous people of this area? How can we invite them back? How can we all participate in a way that is truly regenerative and helping to serve these ecosystems? And when it comes to edible and medicinal plants, that's tending to them in ways that are truly serving them so that those populations can thrive. I also live in wildfire country, and that's a big topic. You know, how do we tend to these forests in a way that help them be more resilient when the inevitable fires do come through? And that one, I mean, that's definitely a sad story in that so many of these forests have been clear cut and mismanaged for profit. So a lot of things to think about. I, you know, living where I live, I live on 20 acres of land that we consider caretaking this land, and I'm surrounded by Forest Service. So I go on a walk every day. I rarely see another person, but I see lots of wildlife and lots of plants. I think of my relationship with the land as tending it. And so when I see fields of yarrow or fields of arnica, whatever plant may be out there, my goal, and maybe I should say like my deep desire, is how can I show up for those plant populations, help serve them, harvest them for myself, but in a way that is regenerative and that's helping to support, you know, their healthy, happy habitats and their resilience. And so, I don't know, I think this idea of wild, to go back to your original question, in some ways, I think that perpetuates this idea that we are separate from nature. You know, what is wild, and if a human interacts with wild, is it still there? You know, is it still wild? You know, I don't know. That's, I guess, a question for philosophers. But I think that, again, it perpetuates that separation between us that I am trying to heal within myself. And I also think that we have to go slowly and take a step back and ask how we can truly be helpful. Because if we move too fast, we can cause harm. And I think a lot of humans have really powerful examples of how we have caused harm on so many different levels for the past hundreds of years. And that can be a hard thing for us too, to grapple with. You know, if we see, I think a lot of people immediately equate human involvement in nature as being destructive. And that is definitely a prominent storyline that has been acting out for a long time. And that's, I think, part of this big call, this resurgence of coming back to the plants right now. A lot of that is healing that wound and saying, how can we interact without being damaging? How can we interact in a way that serves and doesn't just take? And I think those are questions that plant lovers everywhere are trying to interact with and take on and come up with, you know, ways of not just harvesting the plants, but thinking about our relationships with them and how we can form new relationships with the plants, and, you know, kind of heal some of these wounds of the damage that humans can possibly create.
Yeah, I love how you just sort of laid that all out for us, because it's incredibly complex and I feel like we're all still learning. And I also love how, like, in the book you talk about how ethical wildcrafting goes beyond a do no harm approach, and speaking into sort of that paradigm shift in your relationship to plants and that and the forest or whatever, you know, regional or ecosystem that you're living in, that reciprocity to show up in a way where you're both, you know, giving just as much as you are maybe taking or borrowing. And so for people who are kind of new to wildcrafting, what does harvesting with awareness looks like? Are there just some sort of basic ways to be, and, you know, and things to follow that would be supportive for them?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, something that often gets repeated is that when you come upon a plant population that you would like to harvest from, that there's these rules that get repeated, like harvest 1 in 10 plants or harvest no more than 30% of the population. There's, you know, lots of them that get repeated. But that's really difficult, I think, for me to stand behind, in that it really matters what is the plant and, you know, what is that? What are the stresses on that plant's ecosystem? What's going on in the greater story? And that's where slowing down helps to really get to know an area, get to know a plant. Because, you know, for example, you may not need to take as much precaution with harvesting dandelion, which spreads rapidly where, you know, wherever it wants to, versus harvesting maybe a native plant or something that doesn't grow quite as quickly or as willfully as dandelion. But I'm always quick to say, even if, you know, dandelion, even though it grows so rapidly and ferociously everywhere, whenever we harvest dandelion, we harvest with just as much respect. You know, it's not just like a weed that we can take whenever we want, but rather something, you know, just we can recognize, like, oh, if I'm in a lawn full of dandelions, I can probably take a lot more of these than, say, a root that takes many years to grow on a mountainside. So getting to know those plants is really important. And the stuff, you know, isn't rocket science, as you might say. It really does take showing up and looking at things. And when you show up year after year, that knowledge just becomes this experiential thing that you can rely on. Just for example, we can talk about elderberries, which are very important and very popular herb right now. And, you know, visit elderberries every year, you immediately, it doesn't take long before you get a sense of like, oh, this is a really, a big year for elderberries. Those berries are big, they're plump. Usually that's a year there's plenty of rainfall. And I can see that, you know, my harvest can be substantial this year versus coming along elderberry bushes and maybe a drier year and saying, wow, there's a lot fewer berries on these shrubs this year. And I know, you know, that I'm really going to think about what is my use. And then also, you know, what can I leave behind for all the other creatures that are depending on these berries from mammals and birds. And maybe my harvest is none that year. Maybe I'm looking to another plant that might be more more populated that year, or, you know, maybe it's just a very small harvest. So I'm just getting to know those plants and getting to know just kind of the cycles that they go through is really helpful. One thing I'm thinking of right now is that one of the first plants I ever harvested was blackberries. And I was living in Seattle at the time, and I grew up very poor, and I was out of college and living, you know, paycheck to paycheck, just, you know, trying to make ends meet, working 40 hours a week, very low paying job. And I was with friends and we were at a park, and blackberries grow everywhere in Seattle, right? So it's not hard to find them. And we found a blackberry briar, and they were ripe and they were just so yummy. And so we ate a bunch, and then we harvested some and brought them home and made them into a cobbler. And that whole experience was so magical for me. And, you know, just being with friends and eating these yummy berries and making this amazing cobbler. And I remember at the time being like, oh my gosh, like, this is free. Can you believe this is free? All this free food. That is so cool. And just thinking like, you know, I probably couldn't have bought all these berries at the store, but they're just free, growing for free. So anyway, that was like, just kept going on and on in my head. And for a while, I was really like, I thought of wild foods as like free, and how cool is that? And as I've grown just a little bit wiser, I can see that is not really an accurate way of thinking about them. Because maybe there was no cash handed over for that transaction, but it certainly wasn't free. It's not free for us in terms of the energy that we invest. Like, wildcrafting takes a lot of time and energy. Getting to know the plants, getting to know the area, knowing how to ethically harvest. So it takes time and energy in that way. But then, of course, it's not free in that so many beings have come together to bring those fruits to fruition from the rains and the sun, all of the soil, the microbes. And so I think about wildcrafting now as this incredible dance of relationship and how we come together and support each other in that. And I think that's another way that we can heal, you know, is instead of, again, you know, thinking, oh, it's free, this is mine, I can take it, to, I, you know, look at the beautiful gifts that are bestowed upon this plant and all of the beings that have come together to make this happen. You know, from the birds that may have spread those seeds and on and on, to bring this here to me, and the gratitude that we can have for that, and then showing up in service, and on and on. I mean, it's just this never ending spiral. And that, to me, brings so much joy to the whole process of how healing plants are, not just as the medicine that we might make from them, but healing on this deeper level too, of restoring these more reciprocal relationships.
Oh, yes. You know, it feels like what you're kind of speaking into a little bit here too is this shift from like this valuing from a monetary standpoint. So seeing things because of the world we live in this capitalist society, it's sort of ingrained in so many of us where we're always assessing things by the value of it, especially since we have to pay to have a living, which is a crazy concept when you really think about it, right? But then shifting that to a real relationship and your place in this vast ecosystem and world. And so it's like this total shift in, at least for me, the way that I'm really feeling it, it's this total shift outside of this capitalistic paradigm and into one that is like this living, breathing relationship. And I love that you talked about it as a dance. I can even just see as like, depending on your bioregion, it's like a different dance floor, you know? And I know that that's been one of my favorite, things to do in this world is to dance. But like the bioregion where I'm from, which is Chicago, or like my family, which is in Puerto Rico, and where I live currently in Southern Oregon are so vastly different. It's been such a joy to shift dance floors, so to speak, and to begin to dance in these new regions. And one of my favorite exercises in your book, Rosalie, is the what's in your bioregion. This exercise, I just started it. I have not completed it because there's a lot here, but it's just so rich. It's really powerful in making me realize how much there is to learn and know and dance with about the land that one is occupying. Can you touch in just a little bit on this exercise and like, and how did you guys come to decide to have this in your book?
Yeah, so I feel like that's like my I don't know if work is the right word, but that is something that I practice and sink deeper into every single day. Of, you know, what is here and opening my eyes to what is here. And it is amazing how much there is to know. And whether it's learning new plants, new animals, getting to know, you know, the many, many insects that there's like a never ending amount of insects that I can be totally fascinated by. And also getting to know, you know, structures. Where does your water come from? When were the mountains, if there are mountains, you know, when did they come into existence? And I don't know, there's on and on and on. And learning about that is has just been one of my biggest joys. And like you said, there's so much to learn wherever we live. And if we change locations, so much to learn some more. So yeah, right now it's winter where I live and there's lots of snow. And so I really love tracking in the snow, and I'm like no master tracker by any means, but I go out every day and I take my walk and I see what there is to see. And it is so much fun, you know, to see, like, I think about, like, I'm just visiting my neighborhood of friends and I see, oh, you know, the doe and her fawns were here this morning. Those tracks are, you know, new since I was here last. Or yesterday I saw a large cat tracks, and that was pretty exciting. One of my favorite practices is when I wake up in the morning. I wake up pretty early and I'm generally like super excited to just like get to work, really. You know, it's dark out, so it's just kind of like I can write a lot and really have my focus time. But something I do is before I sit down for all of that, I go outside. And, you know, this time of year, it's very cold. It'll be like 20 degrees outside. But I go outside for several minutes and I often don't put on a coat. I know I'll only be a couple minutes. I just want to feel what it is outside. And I just go out there and I listen for a while. And the other day I was out there and just enjoying those early moments. And I got to hear a great horned owl hoot in the distance. And it was such a beautiful thing. So I keep track of all of that. And I write it down in a little like naturalist calendar. And so I get to see that and get to look through the years and see all of those things. And yeah, it's just, but we can, and so, you know, whether we live in the city or like I do very rurally, we can always look at those beings that we get to interact with and get to know them more.
I love that example with listening to the owl and the bird songs and all the different sounds of the landscape. I feel like when I first got to Southern Oregon, that was probably one of the first things that I really noticed was how different the soundscape was coming from Chicago, you know, like inner city Chicago. And I also felt like it was communicating with me, you know? And I think that when we take away some of these, I mean, they may not be impediments or blocks, but just really tuning into the nature sounds, like, or just the natural experiences, how you start to feel like you're part of the conversation. And it just felt really powerful for me.
I love that feeling of being part of the conversation and feeling that, yeah, just that connection of like, I'm here, you're here, we're all here.
Yeah. Well, there is so much more here in your book, and we didn't even get to talk about your recipes, which are so delicious, and there's quite a few that I've already wrote on my list of things to do, especially your Wild and Weedy shampoo and body wash. I've been really on this, like, simplification and no waste kick. And, you know, I hope that it's not just a kick. I hope it's a long-term thing, but it does take a lot of commitment and sort of just like slow shifting. So I'm excited to make my own shampoo. I was just curious, how did you guys come into that recipe? Or did you make that yourself? And then you were like, this is amazing, and we're going to put it in the book.
That one, I did come up with that recipe. So I remember that we had the idea that we wanted to, particularly use have a shampoo recipe, because we were trying to, there's a lot of food in the book and there's a lot of medicine in the book, but we wanted to show like all these different ways that we can interact with plants and welcome them into our life. So I set out to make that. And, so many of the recipes in the book were things that we were already making and loved, but that one was created for the book, and I fell in love with that recipe myself. So that was a really fun one, and that I've continued to use. So yeah, I'm glad that that one's on your, I haven't heard a lot of people mention that. Like, people often mention like the dandelion cake or the violet cocktails, or
sound amazing too. Yeah.
I love that you mentioned the body wash and shampoo. That's great.
Yeah. Well, I just got a haircut. I'm on a hair thing lately. So it's on that. But okay. Amazing. Well, there is one question that I ask everybody who comes on, and I can't let you go before we ask you. And this one's going to be fun. What is one thing that feeds your wild, Rosalie, whether that's body, mind, or soul right now?
Well, the first thing that popped into my mind is my daily walk. And that has been something that has been a great solace to me. And with the pandemic this year, you know, when the pandemic first started, and there was so much, you know, questions, what herbs do we use? What herbs do we use? And I would often talk about working with immune supporting herbs. And that was, you know, that was like the conversation in February and March, right? Is how do we build our immune system? But as the pandemic has stretched on, it's been, you know, for me, herbs in the natural world has been so much bigger than that immune supporting aspect, but also of, you know, where do we turn for solace in these difficult times? And that has been for me these walks. And I go almost every day in all types of weather. And it's very empowering to get out. Like on a day like today, it's sunny, but it's very cold and there's ice everywhere. So I wear cleats and, there's just something about it, getting out there. You know, you could talk about the fresh air, smelling the evergreens in the air, listening to the birds, feeling the sun on my face. And it's really that and all of it. And just that moment of slowing down and being able to go out there and greet all of these beings. And it is such a deep pleasure to go out and say hi to the trees that literally are used to build my home and heat my home, and that also give us a lot of medicine And then see old mullein stalks, which is a wonderful wild weed that also offers so much support, especially for the lungs. And to go out there and greet them and say hello, friends, and see how everybody's doing. So that's, those walks have definitely been a big solace to me. And I can't even, you know, really quantify or even qualify what that's meant to me, especially this year. And just the gratitude that of the blessing that I get to go on those walks and the gratitude that all those beings are out there.
Well, you know, I just came in from Chicago, actually, back. I was visiting my sister. She just had a baby. And so I was there as kind of like her pre and post doula, you know, partum doula, and just helping her with that period, especially during the pandemic. And man, kudos to all the new parents in this time. But I have a practice of walking pretty regularly in Oregon. And so I was like, well, I want to continue this in Chicago. And it's so incredible when you go from a place that has much more you know, what you could say, nature, right? And then you go to an inner city thinking there isn't going to be as much nature, and how open my eyes were to how much nature there was. And then when I received your book, I was like, oh, this is such a beautiful compliment to that. So I highly recommend anybody, no matter where you are, to go on your walks if that's possible for you, and to connect to the nature that is around you in whatever way possible, and to grab Rosalie's book too, to help you along the way if this is new for you. And I believe you also have a generous free gift, Rosalie, your herbal jumpstart. Would you be able to just share a little bit about that for folks?
Sure. Yeah, so I created an herbal jumpstart course to help people answer the question, what herb is best for me? And it's an herbal energetics course. So it helps people understand how to determine first their own energetic tendencies. And by that, I mean these four qualities of if they tend to be hot or cold or damp or dry, and then how to find herbs that help balance or match that. So an example that a lot of people can probably relate to is if you took a bite of a cayenne pepper or had some cayenne powder, we would probably all agree that that's really hot, right? That spicy heat that hits our tongue and can kind of billow out through our whole body of that heat. Or, you know, the opposite, we could say is the opposite of that is, you know, taking a bite of a cucumber and that cooling sensation that comes with that. So herbs have all of these qualities as well as hot, cold, damp, or dry. And we can find the herbs that are ideally suited for us by understanding that energetics, which, you know, is that experiential thing that we've been talking about, way more fun than memorizing, you know, like, you know, cayenne is good for fevers or whatever the case may be, but really getting to experience. So this is a 5-part video series that helps walk through those different qualities so that you can understand them better. And it's really fun because there's lots of fun recipes that you get to make and really get to experience the herbs for yourself.
I love it. Rosalie, I so appreciate how experiential you make everything and so yummy. I think it's really important. Like, it's got to be fun and yummy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Like, why not? So where can everybody find your work and find your book?
Both my books are available wherever books are sold. And I know local booksellers really appreciate the patronage, especially right now. So if they don't already carry it, you can always have them ordered in. And libraries also carry them. So you can order it into your local library as well. And the best place to connect with me is at herbswithrosalie.com, which is my site. And I have lots of free resources on there, including herbal articles and recipes. And I'm also very active on Instagram, which is my full name, Rosalie de la Forêt.
Beautiful. Rosalie, while we end, is there any last bit, whether it's a parting piece of guidance or advice that you'd like to share as we close out with our listeners today?
Well, I imagine there are some people out there who are really into herbs already, and maybe some who are starting to be herb curious. And wherever you are on that path, I would invite you to pay attention to what plants might be calling out to you. And this is something I practice all the time myself. There's so many plants to get to know, and there's a lot that we can cultivate in terms of a deeper relationship. And so, especially this time of year, as we're in the Northern Hemisphere getting ready to go into a new growing season, pay attention. What are the plants out there that are kind of raising their hands and that you keep noticing? Or maybe you don't see it, but you keep like hearing about chamomile and you're curious. Whatever that is, I would just encourage you to pay attention and then follow that thread. It's really amazing the herbs and plants that can show up for us when we need them and catch our attention. And then there's this ever unwinding spiral of relationship and empowerment and on and on. So that would be my last words of advice, is just there's a plant calling out to you, pay attention and then follow it.
Beautiful. Rosalie, thank you so much for, number one, your spirit, for moving through those challenges and for deciding to step into this role of teacher and writer, and then also for receiving that book spirit, that baby book spirit to write this book. We so appreciate it. I'm excited to continue to work with your book for the rest of the year and through the seasons, and I encourage everybody else to check it out as well. So have an amazing rest of your day.
Thank you very much, Vanessa.
Hey there, I made something for you. One of the biggest challenges that I hear from people is that they are feeling stuck when it comes to their health. You're a smart, capable, and creative change maker, right? And you know what you should be doing for your health. So what gives? Well, it's not about willpower. And I wanted to create something that would help you to unlearn the things that are keeping you stuck so that you can get out of your own way and master the mindset of health. That's why I created Wildly Unstuck, where you'll learn the top 5 things that I have found to sabotage your health goals and what to do about them. You'll learn what it really takes to become committed and unstoppable when it comes to your health goals and find the clarity you've been looking for so you know exactly what to do to get back into alignment. And I made it totally free. So if this is something that you want to dive into and create a vision and soul goals for your health and your life and bring your gifts to the world, because we know that we need it, then I invite you to join us in Wildly Unstuck. You can find that at wildlyrooted.com/unstuck. I'll see you on the other side.